So the goal of this recommended budget is to identify a fiscally prudent manner to find balance between increases in property taxes and cuts in services, while trying to find reasonable and appropriate alternatives to mitigate or offset the factors driving both of these needs. This was exactly the point I made at the July budget discussion when I concluded that presentation on the intent of the process when I said, quote, to let you understand the options with the property tax levies and limits and the options with service cuts, because in the end, those two things may be competing against each other. So the impact on property taxes is typically the most scrutinized aspect of a municipal budget. That has particularly been the case here in Franklin, where for the last 5 years, the focus of the Common Council has arguably been on achieving zero growth in the property tax levy, even to the extent of foregoing property tax increases from new growth and development. That action, where we didn't even accept the levy on new growth, has effectively reduced the city's property taxes on all existing properties for each of those years. And that creates a favorable condition for consideration of recovering the foregone taxes on new growth. The 2018 recommended budget proposes a 3% increase in property taxes. So you can see it on the screen. For the last few years, our levy has been $20,509,000, a 3% increase at $615,000 for a 2017-18 total property taxes of $21,124,200. Obviously, compared to the last 5 years, that seems like a significant increase. But from a historical perspective, the increase is reasonable. This gives you a historical perspective. Since 2005, when the current iteration of levy limits was initiated, property taxes have increased an average of 2.06% per year. When one excludes the current run of zeros and 2012, which was only a reduction due to the closure of a TIF, the average raises to 3.3% a year. So you can see from 2005 through 9, the lowest amount of increase was at 3% at about 587,000. Those were under different requirements, but still a levy limit was in place. Since 2005, an increase in municipal property tax levy is restricted by Wisconsin statutes. And currently, the primary factor limiting the levy is the city's annual, they call it, valuation factor in the statute. And the DOR refers to that as the net new construction. In other words, a community may only increase its total levy by the amount of levy that would be generated from the new construction within the community, less the valuation of any structures demolished. There are a number of exceptions and adjustments to this limit level, most of which do not affect a community in a given year. Since 2013, the city has only applied to its budget 4.7% of the total allowable $913,000. So in 2013, we added $43,000 of new levy, and since then we haven't added any, but the allowable levy from new growth has been over $900,000. Adding the figures from 2018, the mayor's recommended budget, the total allowable levy increases to over $1 million, but the additional levy applied remains at less than 66% of the allowable levy over the period, 65.7. There may be many ways that one could look at the proposed increase. For example, if you spread it out over the period since the total levy were last increased, since 2013, it amounts to an average increase of only 0.6%. Maybe the most accurate way to consider the proposed increase is to recognize that it effectively results in ceasing the deferment of a portion of the prior allowable property tax increases. It's not unreasonable to consider such implementation as a deferment, because reinstituting allowable property tax increases that were foregone is now built directly into the Wisconsin state statutes. When the legislature extended the levy limit program on a permanent basis, which was back in 2011, the statute was amended to specifically provide for the ability to access prior year's levy that was left on the table. Effectively, the legislature acknowledged that good fiscal planning should reasonably anticipate that for some municipalities, some levy attributable new growth could or should be delayed in its implementation effectively. That way you didn't have to tax just to retain that amount in your budget. If you didn't need it for a year, you could leave it on the table but still have access to it. That's been built into the statute. And that's the position in which Franklin finds itself. There are multiple options directly accessing prior year to directly access prior year's unused allowable levy. Additionally, the city can access identical amounts indirectly through implementing a levy for the debt service fund, which is something we haven't done through the state methodology. In fact, there are multiple options and strategies that we could use, and they can be used simultaneously. So the mayor's recommended 2018 budget does not propose the specific method by which to implement the property tax levy for 2018, but it does propose increasing it beyond the net new construction of the 0.507 or 0.51%. You'll hear us refer to it both ways. And then we, at the Committee of the Whole, we can talk about the specific details. We talked about them some at the July meeting, but we'll get into that level of detail at the Committee of the Whole meeting. When you then look at the assessed valuations and equalized valuation and the property tax rates that result, again, as we move through the budget process, recognize any discussion on property taxes or valuations are all dependent upon completion of the border review and the final determination of assessed values. Once we get those, the final rates are calculated. So even when you adopt a budget, the rates themselves are tentative and dependent upon what everybody else puts in, corrections that the Department of Revenue applies to our calculations, and the equalization. So we've presented here to show you how the state actually then takes and the end result you get. We start with the budgeted property taxes to be collected, a 3% increase there on the first line. Then they look at your equalized value for TID out to give you your equalized levy rate. Then they multiply that by the equalized value of the whole entire community, including TID, to find out how much actually needs to be collected throughout the whole community. Then they divide that into the assessed value of the TID, and you get your rate. The end result is the 3% increase ends up with a final tax rate estimated at 5.64 compared to a 5.69 now. So about a 0.8-0.9% reduction, about a nickel reduction in the rate. Remember, of course, though, that we did have a revaluation this year and people's property values went up. So that's how the tax rate could go down and we could still collect the 3% increase in taxes. So now let me run through some of the other primary changes. That obviously is probably the most significant individual item, but some of these other ones are very significant as well, because these are the other things that happened to keep us from needing to do more than 3% and still achieve a budget. In staffing, we defunded a heavy equipment operator position. That will affect services. It will affect snow plowing. And it will have an impact on productivity for summer projects. It is a current vacant position, and it is defunded in the budget to remain vacant, as well as a current vacant engineering technician 4. It was defunded for half the year. Sufficient funding was added to fill the position in July when they start doing outdoor field work. While they're doing it, they'll start before then. But the COPS grant, something the Common Council authorized, we were able to find some resources to put toward it. There's about $56,000 in here. That should be enough to fund the first year cost of one of the three if we get one awarded. It wouldn't be enough to do three. It might be enough to start it if we get it late and hire them late to do two. But whatever you do on filling the COPS grant, the catch with that is your share has to go up each of the next 2 years, and then you're fully on the hook for one more 12-month period, fully funded by yourself beforehand. So in the end, the numbers, if we got all three, you know, the cost to the city is almost $700,000 over the four-year period. And if you don't do that fourth year, you end up having to refund them.
Oliver Nelson.
Just one question. When we talked about that COPS grant for the three positions, it was two officers and one detective spot that we...
I wasn't distinguishing between rank. I was only talking bodies.
Then, from what I understood, was it was 100% funded the first year, and then it decreased, like the first year was fully funded for three spots.
No.
Is that not correct?
No, I believe the grant has a maximum allowable federal funding of 75% in any one given year, and your share has to increase beyond that. The numbers the city submitted has our share being around, I think, 33% of our total cost the first year. It's really a confusing way that the state or the feds require the form to be filled out. But bottom line is, for the $56,000, that about covers the ability to fund one of the positions for all or most of the year for our share. The total cost, is closer to the around $100,000, $96,000 in that neighborhood for a full year beginning police officer. But then our share needs to keep going up.
And the ratio changes because there's a cap on the dollar award. So if you apply for three, you get three, it may cost you $100,000, but there is a cap as to the amount of money that they'll provide.
Sure.
Of maybe 600 grand, just using off the top of my head.
If we get the grant, we'll have to look at the number very closely at that time because you're making a longer-term commitment.
If you're awarded the grant and then you reject it, then for the future grants, you actually move to the bottom of the list where we may not get it in the future because that was after...
We've done that once already.
Okay.
The other point that needs to be made on the COPS grant is hiring police officers is not a quick thing. We don't get a lot of applicants. We get a lot of applicants, but we wouldn't hire most of them. So I'm not ultimately concerned about hiring one by the end of the year. So... because we won't find two.
All other new positions requested in the budget, there was insufficient funding for them, so they were denied and are not included. That does include a battalion chief and nine firefighters. I know the mayor included, and I incorporated in the letter of transmittal a recommendation that the Common Council should look at and evaluate and consider whether or not the community should engage in a referendum to add additional resources to fund public safety positions in the future. The way the statutes require the referendums, even though the statute language specifically says spring election, the Department of Revenue has interpreted the rest of it to mean it must mean November. So all the Department of Revenue requires the referendums be held in November. So there's no funding included in the budget for these positions, but there is a recommendation that the Common Council address that so that these requests for future public safety personnel can be considered. Because within the current limitations, you won't be able to grow personnel.
No, not this November.
Next November.
Yeah, we're past the deadline to be able to do this.
We haven't done the work.
You couldn't market it.
Yeah, we haven't done the work yet.
There are some enhancements to personnel incorporated in the budget, upgrading two dispatcher positions to lead dispatcher positions to improve supervision and training, upgrading engineer technician 2 to tech 3. It does fund the third year of the existing police and fire labor contracts, both of which have a 2% at the beginning of the year plus a 0.5% mid-year. But for non-represented employees, it just anticipates a market adjustment of 2% mid-year, so a 1% cost over the year. On the left side of the screen is a slide from that first presentation we made on the deficit that showed you some preliminary steps we were anticipating we would be able to make. So I just wanted to follow up and show you how things did fall out relative to that. Development revenues, primarily building inspection fees, we had thought we might be able to get $379,000. We did build in $350,000 based upon the development pattern that you were shown in July. We didn't get any feedback back that that shouldn't be relied upon, so we did anticipate the building revenues off of that, backed off on them a little bit just because we couldn't count on every single one of the buildings happening in the proper time frame. But so that does build that into our budget. Ambulance fees, we had thought could go up $66,000. We were able, after further discussion with the police or fire chief and the contract firm that does the billing for us, we felt comfortable increasing that $100,000. The property tax refunds from fund balance, we did budget it that way. It's built in for a deficit for the two court cases that are out there. If they get resolved and we have to make a payment, and there's some feeling that that could occur, we will have sufficient appropriations to make that. And it would be, since it's refunding prior taxes collected, we did budget it from fund balance. The health insurance plan is probably, next to property taxes, one of the more significant things built in. Personnel committee's already talked about it. You've already approved the changes, and we're moving forward with it. We had looked to get about $237,000 in savings. In fact, the self-insurance program itself, we estimate this is going to save at least $400,000 in next year's costs. About $140,000 of that flows through to the general fund. It doesn't quite save as much in the general fund and affect the premiums as much as we'd hope, because we did have to make sure the premiums were sufficient to cover the slight deficit that had position that had built up in 2016. So this basically leaves us in a position, which I'll talk about later, of making sure we can eliminate that over a two-year period. But so that the significant changes to the health insurance plan for employees did help us in a number of areas in this budget. Some other miscellaneous adjustments, workers' compensation turned out to work very well to our favor. The state has reduced some of the individual rates, but importantly, our pattern has been good, and so our MOD is down below one. What that means is we're considered to be better than the average employee from a safety and injury standpoint, and when your workers' comp MOD goes down, your costs go down. From the preliminary budget, we've saved about $140,000. The opposite side of that, the OPEB costs were expected to go up about $150,000 from, based upon a report we got from the actuary after we did the preliminary budget, and he was doing that based upon costs of the health plan. So we have backed up on that cost from it, backed off on that cost from the study by about $60,000 because we believe the changes we've made to the health plan, once he reincorporates them, we'll see some of that additional savings come through. So we have asked the actuary to redo his study based upon the new plan design changes that you recently authorized. Severance costs from fund balance, we did build in some revenue to fund replacement of two retirees and do the severance costs from fund balance so we don't have extended term vacancies. These specific ones are anticipated out of building inspection, and given the development level that we've built in and permits we've built in, that smaller size department could not afford to have long-term vacancies to cover severance costs. So we built that in as a fund balance cost. Health department grants, we moved some employees' costs more dependent upon receipt of the grants, so it does reduce the property tax levy impact of the department, but it also means the staffing level is more dependent upon receipt of continued receipt of the grants in the future. Landfill siting fees, we couldn't take greater advantage of these within the general fund because of the action you took at a recent meeting where you approved the Finance Committee's recommendation to limit landfill siting fees to 20% of the total. The mayor, as he stated at the last council meeting where you approved it, was in support of that as well. And it did leave us room to add about $20,000. Pardon?
Your comma's in the wrong.
The comma's in the right area. There's just too many zeros. So it is $20,000.
A zero here, a zero there.
Yeah.
When you add zero to a number, it's still...
Can we do that for the whole budget?
Sorry, I didn't catch that typo. Department line item request, because of where we were in this budget, we did go through and review line item by line item each of the department's requests, ended up reducing about $87,000.
Honorable Elm.
The $20,000, we put in like $200,000 last year, didn't we?
Well, we had $180,000. We were able to increase that. So that's landfill siting fees. I guess I should have been clear. That's an increase of $20,000 to the $180,000 that was already in the current.
All right, so maybe in parentheses you should say something like that. Because otherwise it looks like we're just getting $20,000.
Yeah. Yeah, that is just the adjustment portion. It's not the total. Just like in the health department grant, $16,000 is the adjustment. I think the total is more like 42. Yeah, when you count the other one, yeah. So these are just the adjustments to the line items. So individual line items from departmental requests went down, were $87,000. About half of that, though, we then backed off of the anticipated under expenditure. As you know, we have a line item in our budget that's sort of one bulk line item that covers how much we anticipate departments underspending. So we don't go out and tax for money we end up not using at the end of the year. And in the end, that number was getting a little big as we budgets got tighter and tighter. So about half of that $87,000 that was cut was used to bring that anticipated under expenditure down closer to $400,000.
Now that $87,000, keep in mind that the department heads' requests were not a heck of a lot more than that in total, as I recall. There was not a lot to cut, as I recall.
And for the most part.
Well, there's and I get real nervous about that anticipated under expenditure because the reality is that money comes from not hiring people in staff turnover. And when you don't have a lot of staff turnover, you're not getting that money. So I've never been comfortable with that. And that number is easier to deal with than the hundreds of thousands we used to put in there.
Staff vacancy is probably the bulk of that. But we do have a number of line items that, such as unemployment costs. We do appropriate some to cover where we have to pay unemployment costs. And if that doesn't happen, a lot of line items where we might have something we have to repair, we maybe have $2,000 built in for maintenance costs during the year, and if something doesn't break, departments don't rush out and spend the money. It just sits there. So a lot of those smaller ones can nickel and dime up, but the mayor is accurate. The bulk of that unanticipated tends to be what is often called to as a vacancy adjustment factor. Real quickly, I'll try and run through each of the funds. What we just talked about, all of those things were generally in the general fund, so I'll talk about the other funds. The library fund, the mayor had advised them by a memo that there wouldn't be sufficient money in the property tax resources to resolve the structural deficit. The preliminary budget did put $50,000 of levy toward that, but obviously we didn't have that at the time, so that helped solve part of the general fund issue. But the initial department request, when you look in their budget book that you'll get shortly, was not balanced. They did resubmit a reduction in staffing, so that was something the library did put forward, largely staffing cuts, which is, providing service to people attending the library, and about $4,000 in operating supplies, which I believe is primarily in materials costs. With savings then that came from the health insurance, they actually now have reflects a positive balance of a little over $8,000. When they were doing their cuts at that point, we didn't yet know that the extent to which they'd have savings from health insurance changes. Sanitary sewer fund primarily receives money from user fees. The bulk of the expenses are to MMSD, and we have basically a pass-through of their operating costs. MMSD's proposed an operating increase of 11.5%. Their capital side has stayed flat for next year, but their operating side has gone up because they have a new service contract there. Their long-term one was ending and a new one starting. And so there's a bit of a jump. Therefore, user fees are expected to increase 11.5% as well. The water utility information is not available. You won't have anything in those pages in your budget book. That budget anyway is under the authority of the Franklin Board of Water Commissioners, not the Common Council. But we do add it to the public, to our budget book after it's approved by them for a better public records and public information. Capital Outlay Fund, departments requested about $1.3 million in capital outlay. So